Well, the truth about Iran's attack on Israel is now coming out. If you read the mainstream media, though, Iran didn't even leave a scratch on Israel with the launch of hundreds of drones, dozens of cruise missiles. You might see headlines like this. Take a look. 99% of Iran's aerial threat were shot down. But the truth is starting to come out despite a media blackout. You're not even allowed to enter into those areas to get photos or videos to share on social media. And the New York Times is now reporting that Israel is about to respond and launch an attack of its own against Iran within 48 hours. So a retaliation for a retaliation, I guess. Again, this is according to the New York Times. We want to bring in former U.S. Marine, former U.N. Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter, who late last week said this attack was about to happen, and you were proven correct. It did happen. And do you think, Scott, that we're going to see, first of all, we'll get into the details about the attack in just a moment, but do you think we're going to see an Israeli response here with this war cabinet being convened? What do you think the next 48 hours is going to look like?
Well, I think what we're seeing right now is domestic Israeli politics writ large. This has nothing to do with the security of Israel from a traditional standpoint. This has everything to do with the political survivability of Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister who oversaw, you know, the greatest security failure in Israeli history on October 7th when Hamas attacked Israel, and now has presided over, you know, what some people might even say is an even greater security failure, the inability of Israel to prevent Iran from reaching out and touching with ballistic missiles a strategic defense sites that were protected by the best ballistic missile defense that Israel and American money could buy. So there's some posturing taking place right now. I bring up as much as I can the following reality. No American president in modern era has won election by turning his back on Israel. And no Israeli prime minister has stayed in office by turning his back on the United States. And right now you have a situation where Joe Biden, because of the outlandish behavior of Israel, is starting to turn his back. He made it clear that America would not stand side by side with Israel if it attacked Iran. And we have a prime minister in Israel that's telling the president of the United States, I don't care what you say, I don't care what you do, we're going to behave this way anyways. The motivations of both men are inherently political. Joe Biden is running for re-election, and he can't have another war. He can't have a war with Iran that would create an energy security crisis. Again, I remind your audience that under Biden's leadership, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve of the United States is down to less than 17 days. That's a little over 2 weeks, ladies and gentlemen, of economic viability should Iran shut the Strait of Hormuz and start launching attacks against critical oil-producing infrastructure in the region, which would be a byproduct of any American participation in an Israeli strike. Israel can't launch and sustain a viable military action against Iran without American assistance. So what's happening right now is the Israelis are saying to America, we're going to start this war anyways, and we just assume that you're going to come alongside us because you'll have no choice. And that puts Biden in an even further, you know, political quandary. I would like to believe that a lot of this is debate for political consumption. The fact that, we're reading about this in the New York Times and the Israeli press means that there's people who want us to be reading about this. And I think that's important because it shows posturing. So Benjamin Netanyahu and the cabinet can say, we wanted to strike, but we were held back by the United States, and shift the political responsibility to the United States. I still don't believe that Israel would launch and can launch an attack against Iran because the consequences of such would be dire. Iran proved, and again, I know we'll talk about this later, that it can strike anywhere in Israel anytime it wants. And they've said that if Israel attacks, they'll respond 1,000-fold, and they have the capacity to do so. So we'll see. These are desperate times. And when you start throwing in, you know, narcissistic-driven personal politics, which is what this is about, Benjamin Netanyahu holding on to power, even though his continuation as prime minister is bad for the Israeli state, he does it for his own personal preservation, given the fact that as soon as he resigns or leaves office, he'll be indicted on corruption charges and probably spend the rest of his life in jail. Joe Biden is recognizing that his sinking political prospects in November could go completely underwater if there's a larger war with Iran that destroys the American economy. So, you know, we have both men doing things that are driven not by the collective good of their respective populations, but by their own personal desire for political viability. And if you couch it in those terms, if their priority is, you know, sustained political viability, it's very difficult to predict the future.
One thing, though, is predictable, and it always seems to come to fruition, is what the United States Congress does, which is funnel tens of billions of additional revenue over to Israel. And an emergency meeting this weekend of Congress, you hear Republican leader Mike Johnson, of course, pushing for additional aid to Israel. They're trying to decouple it right now from Ukraine. He'll lose his speakership if he funnels any money, more money to Ukraine. So it seems like Congress has an appetite to send more money and weapons and support to Israel. It'll just see, I guess, what happens in the next 48 hours on Congress. We're kind of watching that closely. But you did bring up the, of course, the attack this weekend and what some of those missiles managed to hit major targets inside of Israel. And as I mentioned off the top here, the headlines, the mainstream media headlines are 99%, we got it, no worries at all. Didn't even leave a scratch. In fact, I even heard those same terms from Israelis saying not even a scratch, not even a scratch. But now we're learning that there was more than just a scratch. Can you walk us through, you've been tweeting about this, and some of the specifics about how this was actually a devastating attack on certain targets in Israel?
Well, I want to put a modifier on the term devastating. To me, a devastating attack means that a facility has been completely wiped out, made non-operational, permanently so. We don't know. There's three primary strategic targets, and there were several secondary strategic targets, meaning targets related to Israeli ballistic missile defense that were struck by the Iranians. One target, which is an Israeli intelligence facility in the Golan Heights, nobody's talking about. And it appears that may have been where the Iranians may have made an exception to their "we just want to touch you" rule and actually have done serious damage to this site. This is an intelligence facility that Israel uses to reach out and collect information in Syria, taking advantage of the dominant heights, etc. And it was involved in the Israeli attack on the Iranian consulate. So the Iranians said, you know, we're taking this out. And there's a blackout of information. Israeli media is not allowed to mention this, discuss this, et cetera. So the implication is something very bad happened there, but that's pure speculation. There were two air bases, and I'll just talk about the one air base. It's a base that the United States has deployed an X-band radar, the ANTPY-2 radar. This is the most powerful over-the-horizon radar in the world today. It gives the United States and indirectly Israel the ability to monitor over the horizon Iranian ballistic missile launches. The radar is specifically designed to collect Iranian ballistic missile launches. And it has been in place in Israel at the Nevatim Air Base for over a decade now. It is linked up with the American ballistic missile defense system, meaning that there's connectivity to Colorado, where the headquarters is, and connectivity to American satellites, surveillance satellites. The totality of the American anti-ballistic missile world is linked up to this, meaning that Israel has become an extension of America's ballistic missile defense. It's also linked to the joint U.S.-Israeli anti-missile systems that have been put in place, the Arrow 2, the Arrow 3, the David Sling capabilities, plus a THAAD missile battery, an American missile battery that has been deployed and integrated, and advanced Patriot systems. Nevatim is the most heavily defended space on Earth when it comes to anti-ballistic missile defense. And this is the place that cannot be touched. It is specifically designed to defeat Iranian medium-range ballistic missiles. The Iranians know this. They've seen this. And so over the years, they've developed certain capabilities. They've evaluated our ability to detect and our ability to respond. They recognize that the moment their missiles take off, that the United States and Israel will be made aware of that fact. They understand that if these missiles fly on a traditional ballistic trajectory, that they will be surveilled, targeted, and intercepted successfully so. And so Iran has developed certain capabilities, such as separating warheads, so that as the missile body comes up and it's detected initially, the warhead separates, and now the radar has to discriminate against the main body of the missile and a smaller warhead. And traditional algorithms, you know, that have been programmed in focus on the main body, so missiles will now be sent striking a derelict piece of space debris while the maneuvering warhead comes in. But now the maneuvering warhead can be detected. The X-band radar is very capable. So as the maneuvering warhead comes in, it does things such as change its trajectory so that you can't do a traditional algorithm driven. The object is flying at this speed on this predictable trajectory with ballistic factors. We can intercept it. Now it's maneuvering, it's changing, and the system has to catch up to that. And then what it can do is the Iranians on this warhead have a engine built in. So at the last second, the engine can fire, changing the trajectory of it, which throws everything off. They also build a warhead that comes in and then fires out a series of decoys that go around the warhead and create multiple targets that overwhelm the system while the warhead itself maneuvers in and strikes the target. So Iran was developing this. What we saw on the 14th was Iran fired missiles that broke through the most sophisticated air defense system in the world and touched Nevatim, and touched it in a way that the people understood that they had been touched. They struck the runway in two spots, center mass, taking that runway out. Now, if they had come in and hit it with 20 missiles up and down the runway, they would have taken it out permanently. They didn't do that. They just said, we can hit this runway anytime we want to. They hit a warehouse. They hit three other facilities, center mass, meaning they didn't miss their target. They also struck air defense systems. For instance, at least two Iron Dome systems were taken out. Israel won't talk about this, but you see the evidence on the video. You see the Iron Dome missiles firing. These are the missiles that I talked about that shoot out the decoys. You see them coming in. They shoot the decoys. The Iron Dome gets saturated, saturates the decoys. Meanwhile, the maneuvering warhead comes in. And at the last second, you can see on the video where the warhead tips up, comes in for the final attack, hitting it direct. Iran has sent a signal to the United States and to Israel that your missile defenses don't work, that we can hit any place we want, any time we want, with as much firepower as we want. We opted not to do it this time because all we're doing is setting a deterrence posture. We're letting you know that if you ever attack us again, we will strike you and you can't stop us. That's the most important aspect about this. The most heavily defended space on the earth in terms of anti-ballistic missile capability was struck successfully by the Iranians using the very missiles that this system was designed to defeat.
And I guess when I say devastating, I mean metaphorically, because to me that is how devastating this is, right? You're sending this clear message. We're not going to wipe out the entire runway. And I know from Israeli sources that they've already got a truck over there. They already patched the runway. So yeah, it was to show you we can hit you and you can't stop us. And that is devastating when we hear about the Iron Dome and the great capabilities of all of this. So Scott, I'll get you out of here on this. We talk about this sort of political posturing, the narcissism of both of these leaders right now. What do you think is going to happen over the next 48 hours? Or if anything, do you think that there will be a massive Israeli response, and do you think the United States will involve itself in it?
Benjamin Netanyahu is a desperate man right now, so it's very difficult to do predictive analysis because desperation is irrational. Most predictive analysis is drawn from rational, logical, analysis. Let me make it clear. Israel cannot successfully attack Iran by itself. Israel has a handful of Jericho missiles that it can fire, and they can reach Iran. But, the Iranian nuclear capability, because that seems to be the principal target, is very well dug in and has been dispersed in a way that it can't be taken out in a single strike. Israel could launch a few of these Jerichos. Israel could try and get some of its F-35Is over Iranian airspace. But the danger here is the F-35 in and itself is a deterrent. The mere fact that Israel has F-35Is is meant to deter people from doing things. If Israel projects F-35Is into Iranian airspace, there's a very good chance that a significant number of these fighters will be lost. They'll be shot down, pilots captured or killed. And the myth of the invulnerability of the F-35 will have been broken. And that's not good for Israel, and that's not good for the United States. And so I believe the United States is telling Israel that we aren't going to be there for you. You're not going to get the refueling aircraft that you think you're going to get. You're not going to get clearance over Saudi Arabia or Turkey. You're going to be going it alone, overflying Jordan, overflying Iraq in a very predictable route. The Iranians are going to be there waiting for you, and then they're going to come in, and it's going to be hammer time in Israel. And there's nothing we can do to help you. We can't stop the Iranians from attacking you. And the next time they attack, they're going to kill you, all of you. It will be very bad for Israel. We don't want that. Unfortunately, desperate politicians often like to say, well, you're bluffing. They're bluffing. They'll never do that. You'll never abandon us. You'll be compelled to come in. I don't know what's driving these Israeli politicians. If it was genuinely the national security of Israel, then they'd call it a day and just, you know, set back and maybe start carrying out more aggressive proxy, hybrid warfare against Iran. That's what I would do if I were the Israelis. But these are desperate people who understand that if Netanyahu goes down, they lose their governing coalition, this far right wing part of Israeli political spectrum. They'll never govern again. It'll be over for them. And so they're desperate to hold on to power. And right now, the posture of being prepared to strike Iran, they deem to be the most domestically political viable posture for them. So this is very dangerous. I have to tell you that I don't know what the future is. Normally, I like to give you a bold prediction, but right now I can't, and I'm actually scared because the consequences as an American. I believe in humanity. I don't want harm to anybody. But if Israel and Iran want to slit their respective throats, that's their business. We can, as Americans, step in and say, we don't think this is a good idea. We think this is bad policy, et cetera. But if at the end of the day, you want to do that, that's your business. But as an American, the consequences that will accrue, the detrimental consequences that will accrue to my country, my people, my nation, will be horrific. And it won't be a nuclear war for us, but it might as well be, because the economic collapse that will happen when we don't have the fuel, when we have... Do you remember that strike in Long Beach, California, when the trucks weren't getting out, and what was happening to the American economy, the price of diesel, the availability of diesel, the lack of food and products in the market? That's just a whiff. That's a hint of what will happen if Israel attacks Iran, and this becomes a regional conflict where the energy security of the world is not just put at risk, but collapses. This will be devastating. The American people don't understand. For all those people out there shouting, we need to stand with Israel, I mean, that's like saying, I want to buy a ticket on the Titanic after it struck the iceberg. The ship's going down. You don't want to be on that ship. But our blind love for Israel, and it is blind, has us doing things that empower Israel to carry out actions that will be extraordinarily detrimental for the American people.
Yeah, we'll see how they feel about it once oil hits $138 a barrel. And it directly impacts the Americans' wallets. And being able to provide food, put food on the table, even when we had the Colonial Pipeline ransomware attack, what that was threatening on the East Coast of the United States. So, yeah, I think you're right about this. And I have that same scared feeling about it. Scott, thank you so much for your analysis and keeping us abreast of what's going on here. And we'll check back with you real soon. We appreciate it as always.
Okay. Thanks, Clayton.
Thanks, Scott. You know, a lot of you probably, you know, may or may not agree with him. I see a lot of people saying thanks for his analysis. Others saying, you know, no, I mean, Scott's a damn fool. Remember, Scott was a former UN weapons inspector and who would walk through these facilities and these sites
in the Middle East. Like he was
in the Middle East. Yeah. Unless, if you've done that in your career and you're sitting there as a keyboard cowboy saying he doesn't know what he's talking about, then you don't know. You don't know. You don't know how he was set up and framed and all of that. I mean, there's a whole, you know, anyway, but he's walked the walk through these sites. He's looked at the, you know, he knows these areas intimately and his sources are fairly impeccable.
And if you're listening, instead of listening through your tribal sensibilities, but if you're actually listening, what he's saying here is that these moves, even if you love Netanyahu and you love Israel, you should absolutely be looking out for the Israeli people. And these political moves will reverberate. They will boomerang back on the Israeli people.
Yeah,
it will cause death.
I mean, I was having trouble sleeping. I have friends in Tel Aviv and, you know, and I was like, I'm praying for you. I hope in the morning, like, you know, God forbid. And thankfully there was no civilian targeted sites. It was focused specifically on military targets where this attack happened. But, there's human beings involved in all of this. So whatever tribalism you have right now, we don't want this. We don't want any of this. And I think at the heart of this, right, what he said there about he's scared. And I feel that for him to say that, a U.S. Marine, former weapons inspector who's been raked over the coals through hell and back when he said that he was going to stand up and admit that there was no weapons of mass destruction, he was told point blank that the CIA was going to ruin his life. Then he's on record about that. And they did. And that's what they do to people that they don't like. And when they tell the truth. But when he said, I'm scared, I mean, it really is a terrifying thought. But furthermore, when he said, you know, if Iran and Israel want to slit their own throats right now, what should the United States response be? The United States response, in my opinion, should be get the hell out of there. And Americans are going to be killed. Americans in these bases are going to be killed. They're sitting there as guinea pigs and as sitting ducks right now. And it's terrifying. So stop it. Try, you know, hopefully cooler heads will prevail and we can get the hell out of there and no Americans will be killed as well in this warfare that's about to unfold. I really hope you enjoyed watching this video. You know, YouTube thinks that you'll actually like this next video right here. It's personalized based on your own viewing habits. So if you watch the video, please leave a comment. Let us know what you think about it. And we will see you next time, everyone.